Good morning. It's the 9 o'clock hour. You're listening to WOWD LP Tacoma Park. Good morning, everyone. We hope you're having a great start to your day. This is our new time slot for the Art as Experience radio program. We hope you're enjoying your morning. We hope you can join us with maybe your morning joe, your OJ, or maybe your breakfast tea, or even a smoothie. We want to be the cream cheese schmear on your bagel, the jelly on your English muffin, the butter on your toast, the blueberries on your scone, we can go on, and the chocolate on your croissant. We hope we can get you juiced about talking about art. You're tuned to WOWD LP Tacoma Park, 94.3 on your FM station. This is your community radio station, and we hope you're enjoying us in the airways. We hope you've enjoyed Meg and her eclectic mix of tunes to start your morning. This is Tom Xenakis, and I'm with Sheila Blake, and we are the hosts of the Art as Experience radio show. We hope you've enjoyed our previous programming.
Hi, this is Sheila. Art as Experience is an hour radio show dedicated to looking at art. We hope that Tom and I can introduce our listeners to what we've been looking at and help the viewer when they visit the exhibit create in their soul, in their experience, their own work of art. We also have an Artist Experience page on Facebook where we put images of the things we're talking about. And you can look at that page, and if you can follow along with us, it would be great. It's also a place where we love our listeners to give us ideas and feedback. You can like us. That would be cool. Please look at it if you can while you're listening. You can stream the program at tacomaradio.org. Also, we're putting podcasts of this show on my website, sheilablake.com, so you can listen to that at any time. We at WOWD LP Tacoma Park are always looking to improve our community radio station.
Well, today we have a show that's a bit different than we usually have, and of course we're going to talk about primarily the process of drawing. We will start by looking at master drawings from an exhibition that just opened last weekend at the National Gallery of Art, the West Wing. The exhibition is titled Bosch to Bloemaert, Early Netherlandish Drawings from the Museum of Bojemans van Bundingen. I wish I can get that right, in Rotterdam, Netherlands. That's a mouthful in the morning. And anyway, the exhibition is in the West Building in the East Outer Tier. The exhibition is free to the public, and it goes until January 7, and 18, so I have lots of time to see it. It's a large exhibition, so bring all your faculties and patients to see it. This is our first program dedicated only to drawing as a form of visual communication in the history of art. In high school, and still today, I was always a doodling dude. I doodle all the time. Well, in high school, I was drawing a portrait of my metallurgy teacher, Mr. Roth, and I'll never forget him. He caught me red-handed drawing a cartoon, and I was drawing his mug. Well, he ran over and grabbed my lab book where I was drawing, and he threw it across the room, and he shouted, "We don't doodle in here." I am one of those listeners that love to doodle. And doodling, by the way, is a form of drawing. Sheila, why is drawing and learning so important? Why is a learning drawing and drawing so important? Tell us about that.
Well, the last program, I wanted to say that I'd broken my knee, and it's getting better, but I went to the National Gallery hobbling around in my crutches to see the Bosch Blomart early Netherlands drawings. And for some reason, the guard wouldn't allow photographs, which they always do, but I think it's the light on the fragile paper. And I always agree, I hate people taking pictures, but this time I needed those pictures. I'd looked on the internet and through my books, but when an artist produces 1,500 drawings and they're all something like old man and a beard or trees in the forest, it's really hard to find that exact one in a certain show. Anyway, the guard was watching me the whole time, and I was trying to manage my crutch, my phone, and the pictures are awful, so please bear with me. Well, I'd like to try to define what drawing is first. It's a little hard to pin down. Drawing is often thought about as being on paper, as being made with graphic materials, pencil, charcoal, Conti, pen and ink, brush and ink. Basically, it's tonal and not much color, and that's largely true. A drawing can be a sketch, a record of an idea, the first take on a subject, or it can be a fine finished image. But the continuum of drawing is line. And I believe that drawing is the basis of all art and visual thinking. There's no great art without great drawing. Drawings are mostly linear. The line is the most descriptive element. And whereas in painting, the canvas can be covered, in drawing, the paper is a really important element. It can even be drawn on or not. And the paper is as a part of the drawing as the line. The quality of the paper is important, the texture, the color. Pastels can be considered either drawing or painting, but I think the most important is that drawings come first. It's the first impulse and the first ideas. In a drawing, the process is much more transparent. You can track back through the process of the drawing and take part in its making. The drawings in this exhibit are mostly finished and refined, and sometimes there's not much difference between a drawing from the 16th century and one from the 19th or even 21st century. In the second part of the 20th century, artists such as Willem de Kooning, Jasper Johns, Cy Twombly, and Richard Serra began to see that process. The making of the object was a subject in its own right. Drawing is a perfect vehicle for process because it's transparent. I mean, you can imagine yourself making the drawing.
Right. And in the beginning of the exhibition, there was a placard that outlines the reasons for drawing in the 15th and 16th century in the Netherlands. Well, in the 15th century, few works survived. So the works seemed to be copies of older works. Copying other drawings were used as a mode of instruction, as examples for students to learn, and a way for them to practice their technical skills. Drawing techniques were difficult to learn, such as metal point and mixed media, which we'll define later. In the 16th century, the use of drawing was expanded to be preparatory sketches for prints and paintings. The sketches were also used for design in stained glass and book illustration. These were two newer forms of use of the drawings. Anyway, the important thing is that sketches supplied an example for the process, as Sheila just mentioned, for the artist to show their patrons and their potential clients also. Then later on, the drawings began to work as independent works of art, as we know them today. Sheila, why is drawing an art form by itself?
Well, I think that learning to draw is essential. And most art schools have life drawing as part of the foundation of instruction. I hope they still do. Learning to draw is learning to see. It's learning to feel. It's to understand the translation of what you see to putting it on paper. It's to be able to put down visual ideas. Sometimes even photography students learn to draw, and that's essential. How to compose in space, recognize line and rhythm. Learning to draw gives you command.
Wonderfully said, Sheila. Mm-hmm.
And here's the other thing about drawing. It is a skill. It may be seen as a measure of the skill of the artist. And it's such a wonder to draw well. With the drawing programs and even a device on the computer to transfer objects to the screen, there is nothing like expressive drawing.
Well, for those beginners and artists wanting to learn to draw about drawing itself, you might be asking, what could I do to improve and learn my skills? What subject should one start to draw? I think this is really important for beginners. I would start with objects that you know well, simple forms with little texture and pattern that should be with light in color or tone. Objects such as eggs, cups, onions, even bananas. Then one could challenge oneself with something like peppers and oranges and maybe apples. They're a little more difficult because they're a little shiny and they're a little more modulated. Drawing one's hands is a more advanced exercise, but you could draw with a white cloth pinned to a wall, which is a very exciting and a simple way to begin to study drapery. Leonardo da Vinci did that even in his later life. He would put up some white drapery and draw it on a white wall to improve his skills in his humble way. But let's define some terms as we have in so many shows. Sheila, why don't you start off with the difference between drawing and printmaking?
Okay, I'm going to, but first I want to add, you cannot draw from photographs and get the same thing as drawing from life.
Thank you so much for mentioning it. I totally forgot to mention
that. Thank you. All right. Okay, so the difference between drawing and printmaking. In this show, the drawings are often preparations for etchings, and in some cases, they're drawn backwards to allow for the reversal in the prints. The prints allow for multiple copies, and of course, there are print techniques that can't be done any other way.
Right. What about the difference between charcoal and chalk?
Okay, so charcoal is made from willow, wood, or other organic material that's heated in an oxygen-poor atmosphere so that the carbon doesn't burn. You're essentially evaporating everything that isn't in the plant and reducing it to a carbon. The process of manufacturing charcoal was discovered by P.J. Coates, and he was growing willow for wicker baskets, and the need for wicker wasn't as great, and he was kind of in despair. And then one day he noticed that these willow sticks by his fire, he decided to put them in an airtight container in the baker's oven overnight. And in the morning, he had charcoal.
I had no idea,
yeah,
Sheila.
It's true.
Thanks for telling me that. Well, what about a few of the drawings were called versos in the show? What are they?
Well, that's when a drawing has been drawn on both sides of a page. And so what they do is they're able to frame it so that you can see both sides.
Yeah, there's a couple of winners in the show. Mm-hmm. And how about mixed media? A couple of the many drawings were mixed media in the show.
Sure. Well, oftentimes when you use charcoal, even on a white paper or on a ground of gray, the white can be used like either an opaque white like casein or chalk. It's used to highlight so that there's a white lighter than the paper.
Absolutely. And one of the important things, and I've been teaching and you've been teaching drawing for so many years, what about the middle ground or toned paper?
Oh, yeah. Well, I used to draw on gray paper, and I'd feel like all I had to do was add the darks and the lights, and the rest of the paper was already there.
It creates its own tone.
It creates its own tone. And so it's either, in this case, in the early days, it was either washed with ink or natural substances like coffee or pigments. And in some of these drawings, there's a texture to the paper. The paper can be really important, how it accepts the ink or the charcoal, what color is it, the variety of grays, and sometimes even with intense color, there are some Durer drawings with a really intense blue. The paper that it was used at that time was hard to come by, and artists even kept small scraps and glued them together and reused them.
Yeah, that's absolutely mm-hmm. right. Drawing on middle ground paper is quite fun. Mm-hmm. Some of the drawings were called vellum. What exactly is a vellum?
Well, vellum is a very fine-grained, unsplit lambskin, kid skin, or calf skin that's prepared especially for writing on or for binding books.
Right. Well, thank you for those, Sheila. Well, there's a lot of gestural drawings in the exhibition. A gesture or a figure study is one that kind of communicates a moment in time through movement. So there were many of those. And there was many drawings in the show that were called ink wash. Now, you might want to ask, why is ink, you know, a drawing medium and not a painting medium? Well, the reason why, and you could use a brush or an ink pen, is because it's a monochromatic medium. And that's why it's put into the drawing category, because most drawing in its basics is monochromatic, meaning one color. And then one of the more complicated techniques in the show was something called metal point, which is silver point or gold point. And that's basically a stylus that's basically made of gold or silver. And it's kind of rubbed so that it's kind of has a little of the gold and silver on its surface. And then it's drawn on a very rough surface. And the grit of the surface kicks off the silver, and it creates a line, which is usually very gray or yellow-gray in the case of silver point and metal point. It is a very difficult medium, and you have to be really, really technically virtuous to get those lines exact, because they don't actually erase easily either. And then we have modeling lines. This is a particularly important thing in the show. Modeling lines are kinds of lines that are used to create a three-dimensional illusion on a two-dimensional surface, meaning lines that you might know of and you've heard of is like hatch lines, which is lines that go in one direction, and then its neighbor, crosshatch, is when they go in different directions, and they make a kind of a netting or a grid. And then there's stippling, which is dots, a lot of dots and concentrating to each other. And then there's eyelash lines, which are thick on one side and thin on the other, which are make look like eyelashes. There are many kinds of modeling lines, and you see many of these in the show. When you see the show, you might want to ask, why are so many of the papers kind of yellowish, and they kind of look like they're kind of not the right color for the drawing, and the drawing looks a little hard to see? Well, that's because a lot of the papers, then, they yellow because they have acid in them. Many of them were probably not acid-free like we see today, but tannins or any kind of acid in the paper is going to make it yellow or discolor it, almost like a reddish color. It doesn't look pure white. So very few of the drawings in the show are pure white at all. So now we're going to continue on. We're going to enter the exhibit, Sheila. Why don't we start?
Okay. Well, we go into the exhibit, and the first thing we notice is that all the drawings are fairly small. They're, you think, oh, there's a lot of these to get through.
And then, yeah, they were.
And then they also give out magnifying glasses, which were kind of gross. And you have to really get up close. And then I realized that this is a really good experience, because I would say that all of us these days, part of ourselves are preoccupied with what's happening in this country and in the world. And this is a chance to really forget about it. It's like you're immersing yourself in the world of 16th century Dutch drawings, and they're weird and exciting, but you have to really look closely. We are choosing only about 13 drawings from the exhibit to talk about, because there were probably 100 drawings in this exhibit, so we chose the ones that we want to see. I wanted to say also that, which I've mentioned before, but the thing is that there is the pure skill of drawing. And, I mean, who can draw like that? These artists have been trained in all the basics. They're trained in perspective, which was invented in Italy about 100 years earlier and made its way up to Northern Europe, and light, how light hits the objects, the pen and ink technique, which Tom's just talked about, drawing from nature, the figure, drapery, clouds, composition, volume, so that in the subtlest way, form comes out of the paper in a way that's sort of a miracle.
Yeah, absolutely, Sheila. Thank you for that. And, you know, sometimes I wonder about these large museums, if they're in touch with the attention spans of the audience seeing the artwork. And I was watching a lot of people in the gallery, and, you know, one would look at one and walk 50 feet down, skip about 30 drawings, and look at another. And it was like there was 100 in the show. That's kind of like fast-fooding the exhibition. But anyway, there were 100 drawings, and they gave out the magnifying glass to see the brilliance and the attention to the close looking to communicate what they were saying on the paper. And I took one of those magnifying glass, and I have to say, it was a bit gross. I think the museum should have either a bottle of some kind of, you know, antibacterial, you know, cream or something to clean off those and some paper towels. No, I'm really serious. I think that's really, really a good idea. It was kind of a turnoff, but I'm sure they didn't want anybody to get any of that, you know, soap on the drawings. But I'm not a clean freak, but I think they could have done a better job. Okay, and let's start with Hieronymus Bosch.
Okay, well, Bosch is probably almost a household name. He was the first person that we know of to draw really grossness. And the drawing is Owl's Nest that I'm going to talk about. And it's it is a drawing of an owl in a tree. And that's it. And it's tending to a baby owl in the tree, but all of it, his work is so macabre, it's nightmarish. And so even when you're looking at this owl, you notice that there is like other predatory birds looking around, and in the very distance there's a pole with a wheel on it, and that wheel was used to hang bodies after their execution that are and they're left to the elements.
Yeah, you have to look closely.
You have to look really closely, but there it is. And so, and those predator birds looking out is like, ugh. And so Bruegel, the elder, he followed on the heels of Bosch in his fantasy underworld. Even grotesque creatures are drawn with graphic precision. And the pictorial elements of the land, the water, and the sky, and the buildings, and the machines, these drawings have disgusting quality to them. So he really wins. I would say Bruegel wins the prize for grossness.
Well, to contrast that, I want to mention that we're mentioning these works, but they're not in any particular order in the exhibition. In other words, one's in the beginning, one's in the end. And, Abraham Blomart did a series of figure studies, which is a verso drawing with a study of a young woman on the other side of the drawing. And it's towards the end of the exhibit. It's really beautiful. And it has these studies of hands and feet in black and red chalk, and I think they're really beautiful, and they're also closely studied. And this is for someone interested in drawing. You know, draw your own hands. You know, the feet are a little more difficult, but the hands are right there. And he does a beautiful job in looking at the underside of feet, the ankle, and they're really wonderful. And the other side has this really, really beautiful study of a young woman. And it's not as strong as the hand side, and it's a little harder to see, but these are really good items to draw you know, for beginners. Like, go to the library or go to a public place and draw people walking, you know, or sitting on a park bench. And I think this was a good way to end the show, because it's a way to get, you know, people of drawing that want to be students of drawing to get used to looking at that. Well, WOWDLP was just named the best radio station in D.C., and we want to congratulate everyone on the air publicly
for all
their hard work here at the station, and it's great news. And we at Art as the Experience radio program, we've been here from the beginning. It's 15 or 16 months old now. And it's been incredibly fun, right, Sheila?
This is a great experience. It really is.
And you all that are listening are an important part of this program, and you're an important part of our growth on the station. So as we've grown together to enjoy our diverse programming as a local community radio station, we ask you now to help us grow by making a financial contribution to support our unique and inventive programming that we have here at WOWDLP Tacoma Park. There's no other program like the Artist Experience Radio Show in all of the metro area. Anywhere else on this planet. So take a moment between your sips of coffee and your nibbles on that scone, and go online and press the donate button at our website at tacomaradio.org. Your support will help us provide you, our listener, with the listening pleasure you deserve, as we are a 24-hour-a-day, 7 days a week radio program. We thank you, and we invite you to tell your friends how good it feels to be involved and to help WOWD be the best it can be in D.C. and beyond. Sheila, why don't you start with our next tree study?
Sure. Well, again, the second did a study of a tree trunk. It's chalk and pen and ink and wash. And this is an extremely realistic drawing. It has the texture of the bark, the little twigs, except it's not a known species. And there are subtle sleeping creatures in the roots, and the twigs have the appearance of hair sticking out of an old man's ears.
Oh, great.
I mean, it's like looking at a tree from a certain point of view. The paper has a really fine texture, but the part of the tree that's not covered with bark is smooth. It could have been smoothed out, like with a spoon, some tool, so that the image comes alive almost off the paper. And even in its weirdness, it's still a relief, just because it's one thing from the 50 or 100 creatures in the Bruegels. Degen studied with Gauthier for 5 years, who's a fabulous artist. We'll talk about him. And he did landscapes and natural history. And Jan Bruegel the Elder.
Yeah, did the, that was the great flooded valley with trees.
Yeah.
From 1590 to 1595. Mm-hmm. Well, this contrasts greatly with the drawing Sheila just talked about. It's a fleeting glimpse of trees in a landscape, in a series of little sketches of trees and the environment behind the trees. The thing about this drawing, Sheila, which definitely contrasts yours, which was a little kind of, you know, stiff and kind of sessile, was it has incredible movement in the brush and the mm-hmm. pen here. And it's just amazing. The artist achieves great 3D illusion with the strong pen and ink work and the use of the modeling line.
Screenplays on the side. Three nights
Welcome back. You're listening to WOWDLP Tacoma Park 94.3 FM.
Well, you know, we get into the exhibit here, and now we coming up to the big, big, amazing drawings in the exhibition, Sheila. The Portrait of a Bearded Man by Heinrich Goltzius absolutely blew me away. Talk about it for us.
It's so interesting because, Tom, you and I went to this exhibit separately. We usually go together.
Right.
And we both came out of there with the sense, he is the greatest. And this has, like, best in show.
For sure.
So Goltzius, he was born in 1558. And it turned out to be when he was a child, he was his hand was hurt in a fire, and so his hand was somewhat deformed, and it turned out to be very amazing because somehow being forced to draw with the large muscles of his arm and shoulder, he mastered a commanding swing of line. And when he was 21, he married a widow who could support him, but he had such unpleasant relationships with her, and it so affected his health that in 1590 he made a tour through Germany to Italy, and he acquired an intense admiration for the works of Michelangelo. So he, in Italy, he really brought Italian art to the North. And he returned to Harlem in 1591. He was considerably improved in health because he wasn't with his wife. And he worked there until his death. So there's a portrait of a bearded man, which is subtle colored chalk on paper. In my opinion, and Tom's, it is the best drawing in the show. It's got so much humanity. And whoever this man was is with us now. You just got to see it.
I mean, there's so much spirit. He's looking up. It's kind of this gaze. You don't know what it's looking at. Is it heavenly gaze? I have no idea what that is. But and it's just a handsome, like, visage of a bearded man. And the use of the chalks, the movement of the chalks, it really is stunning.
Well, you know, a part of the magic of drawing is how little it takes. A piece of charcoal, a few pieces of chalk, a pen and some ink, and there's everything. And then it's kept alive through centuries, and it's as if it's just being discovered as we look at it.
Oh, yeah, with that freshness.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
That's it. It has a freshness like it could have been done yesterday.
Yes.
Well, I want to contrast two other drawings by Goltzius, which are so different from The Portrait of a Bearded Man. And one is Venus and Cupid from 1590, which is a pen and ink drawing. And the other one is a man with rhinophema, which is an interesting drawing. We'll talk about, firstly, about Venus and Cupid. Well, this, again, is a mythological subject that the Dutch were very fond of. And you really need a magnifying glass for this one to appreciate the fantastic use of modeling lines. There's hatching, cross-hatching, eyelash lines. He has the kitchen sink of lines on there, and he does it really well. Tight and controlled and very, very beautiful. Every aspect of that composition is considered with beautiful line. Then to contrast that, we have a drawing a few feet away, which is a Goltzius who's totally free and loose and gestural, the opposite of what I just described in Venus and Cupid. And it's very reminiscent of the Leonardo da Vinci grotesque drawings. It's basically a gentleman with a skin disease. The nose is somewhat overgrown and kind of warty and stuff. It's big. Occasionally you see people with that even here in the 21st century. And it's very free-flowing pen and ink. It's kind of wild. And it's remarkable. There's a boldness and a confidence to it that is totally out of control, but yet in control. And that's it. And there's also a comic bit of it, because it has a strange linear environment in the back, just this fleeting long lines, almost like the guy is either in prison or something. There are these really so wild nature to that. So it's totally contrasting the other two drawings that we just talked about. There's another one other work which is a little different, Sheila. Talk about the Sacrificial Seal by Goltzius.
Well, this drawing is done in pen and ink, and it's white, heightened with white on a green-gray paper, so it's a beautiful ground. And this work has so much movement. I wanted to say, Tom, when you were talking about gesture, gesture is really like the life, the energy, the movement, the essential movement. And that's something that Golsi has really got. And that's important in drawing today, is to really capture the movement. In spite of all the activity in the Bruegels, which are just chock full of creatures and people and allegories and everything, these pictures are alive with motion. And even more than that, the space, the light with the heightened white chalk on the tinted paper and the beautiful form and the ethereal light beyond. He can draw any figure in any position and flying in the air, coming down to earth, and you believe they are moving and struggling and wielding. This guy is terrific. The bestial strong animals are being slaughtered. A bull, a pig, and it is a lovely play of the animal and human figures in an architectural space. It's gory, but it's fabulous.
Yeah, it certainly is. And there's another one down the another drawing down the hall by Hans Beckart, and it's the Battle of the Giants and Gods, which is also called the Gigantomachy. And it's a wonderful drawing of great figural movement, as well of these ethereal figures. They're kind of light on a mountain slope. There's splashes of white, opaque paint, and possibly white chalk. It's loose and flowing, and very different from many of the works in the exhibition. It's almost a bit modern in that sense, and it's reminiscent of the Swiss artist Henri Fuseli, which is about 300 years later, and is a very kind of sense of maybe it's the subject, maybe it's the way he has the figures in these interesting spaces. Well, let's get a little into these animals, because there's a lot of them in this show.
Yeah, well, one of the things is that people were bringing, you know, animals from the East to Europe, and camels, elephants, lions. And so how do you record these animals except draw them? In some cases, it's almost impossible to imagine that you were with six lions in a den drawing them. But you're not exactly sure how they get in. But don't forget, we didn't have cameras. They didn't have cameras. So how do you record these exotic animals? There's a terrific drawing of a dromedary by an unknown artist, and it's very well examined and felt. Okay, so now we're going to talk about Martin van Heemskerk and the triumph of St. Stephen on an outrageous elephant, the triumph of Joseph on a tough bull, the triumph of Isaac on a fantastic camel. And I thought you were so funny when you said they're like drawings by Dr. Seuss, but they are. This guy is much more a cartoonist than he is recording anything real. The figures aren't lifelike, and they're really actually terribly proportioned. But they're full of expression, and they're definitely telling a story. So even in the Netherlands in the 16th century, there's room for silliness. But he was so popular. He made a series of etchings of the wonders of the world, many, many biblical paintings and altarpieces. And he went to live in Italy for 4 years, and then he went to live in France. And when he died, he had amassed a fortune, which is peculiar to me, because he has the most artificial and off-putting bizarre style, but that was what was popular. So besides the two elephants drawing a huge carriage, the accompanying figures are men, a winged angel, and something else. Maybe we call it an intersex person, but it is curious.
Yeah, they're very, very curious. Yeah. They need to be looked at carefully. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to talk about that dromedary that you were talking about, the Circle of Roland de Savary, and it's from 1600. Well, you know, Sheila, you know I know my camels. You know, whether it's one humped, two humped, or one and a half humped, I know camels. And this was one beautiful camel. And I'll explain all the details about my knowledge of cameras later, Sheila, over coffee, but I spent a lot of time looking at this drawing. This was a camel that filled the entire page, top to bottom, left to right, like I usually tell my students to do. And it had very subtle tones and wonderful edges. It's all about the textural edges. It's almost like fuzzy camel hair, and it has like a quality of a woolly kind of animal. And these menageries and private zoos in Holland at the time must have been such a great resource. You know, it's something new to draw. It must have been very, very, very exciting. Yeah. So that dromedary really was one of the showstoppers as well. So why don't you talk a little more, Sheila, about WWDLP?
Yeah. Well, this is WOWD, Tacoma Parks Community Radio Station, and we need your money. We are, I mean, as Tom mentioned before, and we can't say it enough, we were just selected as the best radio show in the, or radio
show. Show. Oh, yeah, station.
Station.
Station. Well, we know the program's the best. But
Washington metropolitan area, and that is a great honor. And it's so... such a terrific thing. So the resources are our people, and everybody almost here is working for free, and these amazing people have so much to share, I mean, with all of you. And we have Bobby Hill and his wonderful jazz stations, and
our show
coming right
Bobby's
up.
Ready to go.
Yep. And one of my favorite programs is Ride with Clyde. And Clyde drives people around Washington, and he asks them about their favorite music, and then he plays it. And you never know what you're going to get. And, of course, talk shows like this one. I had an artist friend, and I used to say that we come home from a dinner party, and not one person asked us about what we did as artists. And I'd say, well, they don't know what to ask. Well, I got a show with my radio partner and friend Tom, and we ask the questions and we answer them too. It's information about artists by artists, and it's got a cherry on the top, which is us.
Thank you for that.
So there is talk shows like this one with young people and older people and everyone in between, and it's such an exciting thing, this station. But we're practically running on fumes, so join us, be part of us. No donation is too small or too large. This station is for you, so contribute. You can reach us on our website, TacomaRadio.org, and press that button and donate.
Yes, that's the way, Sheila. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go on to, you've mentioned Peter Bruegel a few times in this show. Yes. With his grossness, and now you're going to get into him. So why don't you share a little about the virtue of fortitude and the virtue of temperance?
Sure. Okay. So these are allegorical drawings. And allegory, that's the topic we need to talk about here, because it's a means of expressing abstract ideas through a combination of symbols and personifications in an extended metaphor. Allegory was developed by the philosophers and writers of classical antiquity. The word derives from the Greek term allegoria, to speak of something under the guise of something else. In fine art, the objects, persons, and actions depicted refer to meanings, whether they're moral, they're social, religious, or political, beyond the literal figurative representation. Though allegory is rooted in Greco-Roman antiquity, it became a powerful mode of religious expression during the Middle Ages. Pope Adrian promoted the use of allegory in order to show the invisible through the visible, to express complicated spiritual concepts through the comprehensible material world. An artist developed a complex iconography to represent Christian notions of vice, virtue, salvation, death, and resurrection. During the Northern European Renaissance, artists such as Peter Bruegel the Elder continued to draw from medieval allegorical conventions for his famed series, The Seven Deadly Sins and The Seven Virtues. So I'm going to go on and describe. There are several of these drawings in this show. One is charity. The personification of charity is a woman in the middle with an unconvincing pelican on her head. I guess this is hard to find a real pelican, but the pelican was believed to feed her young with her own blood in times of famine. So Charity stands in the middle performing acts of mercy. She's feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, tending the sick, lodging the traveler, burying the dead. Her hand on her heart and a child in her hand who is pleading. In Christianity, the flaming heart is a symbol of sacrifice, higher love, grace, and mercy. A cripple with slippers for his hands is receiving a loaf of bread. A man in stocks is receiving mercy. A burial, strangers being welcomed at the door. The plague doctor in a blanket with a bird mask tending to the sick. All this is in this really small drawing, and there's probably a whole lot more.
It's amazing how much he packs into that little page.
Mm-hmm. No kidding. And there's another one of the virtues, fortitude. This drawing, it's a complicated scene of the remains of war. It's got horses, riders chasing an army in retreat, animals morphing into men with tails, ugh. And in the foreground, the goddess with angel wings stands alone while the war wages on. Temperance, where the allegorical figure holds the reins of her own and the people around her practice music, geometry, logic, and arithmetic, astronomy. Temperance means abstinence from sin, but it also includes these things, music, study, moderation. It's completely organized. The drawing is unexciting till you look at all the weirdness that's happening behind the scenes. The creatures are repulsive, but they're also curious and fantastically imaginable.
You know, I had seen those at the end because I kind of went through the exhibit from backwards, actually, and I have to admit, after about three of those, and my, you know, I had seen all these drawings, my eyes were going like goo goo gaga,
yeah.
And I had a lot of trouble looking at these drawings. I mean, they were weird enough, but I was just so exhausted. But we're gonna end with the last one, which I found very peculiar in some ways, but it's a kind of reminiscent of a very famous work. And this drawing was by the follower of Jan van Eyck, one of the greatest of all Dutch artists. And it's a crucifixion from 1440 to 1450, and it's silverport and gold point on very degraded, discolored paper. And it relates to a work, mysteriously enough, that's a completed painting in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the crucifixion by van Eyck himself. This is interesting addition to the exhibition because there's a lot of mystery. Why can't it be the sketch by, you know, van Eyck himself? They don't feel it is, but there is debate out there. And it must have been some kind of tracing done probably from another sketch. But the final painting and that have a lot in common. They're almost really exact, so it's very interesting. And the work is so dark, you have to look really closely at the figures, like, you know, the three men on Golgotha, Christ and the two thieves. But the paper is so dark, it must have been very rich in tannins, and it's highly discolored. But the silver point and gold point work is fantastic. It's very meticulous in its line quality, and it's quite a unique copy. But you've got to look close, and the magnifying glass is so important. Well, we've only shared just a few drawings, Sheila, of this huge exhibition. I hope we did justice to that. So, in closing, what about this drawing show?
Okay, so I hope just for this hour, you've had your attention on Dutch drawing, and within such a tight range of time and place, and there are many similarities in these drawings, but each artist is so distinctive. It's clear that they all had rigorous training, and I don't mean just a semester of figure drawing. And that's something
right.
I really believe in today. I've included on the Facebook page, the Artist's Experience Facebook page, a figure drawing by William Bailey, who is a contemporary artist. And just to show you that fine drawing isn't only in the past. It takes talent, it takes hard work and dedication, but it is a wondrous thing.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned William Bailey. He came to my studio when he was a graduate student, and William Bailey could definitely draw, but I'm not particularly crazy about his work, but nonetheless, I had my experience with William Bailey. He cut me to ribbons as a graduate student. But anyway, well, developing the skills and confidence to draw feeds into so many aspects of visual communication. You need to know how to draw to work on computer drawing programs for our technological age, for illustration, graphic design, video and gaming design, animation, storyboarding, and even CAD systems and architecture. So it goes beyond painting, sculpture, and other mixed media in contemporary art. Drawing is essential to express oneself on a basic and sophisticated level. And besides, it's fun. It's another way to express yourself. So if you love to doodle, keep on doodling and drawing, and have a wonderful day, and we hope you've enjoyed the show, and thanks for listening. Sheila, what about some upcoming programming?
Well, I'm wondering how many of our listeners love pets like me. I think it would be really a lot of fun to see
a show.
I want to see a
show. Saw as a pet, too.
That's good. Dedicated to divine felines, cats of ancient Egypt. This exhibition is in the Freer Sackler Galleries on the Mall, and it's free, and it opens in mid-October. And so, not to insult animal lovers that are dog lovers, there's a section for pooches as well.
Okay, Sheila, well, we've got to thank our friend and co-radio man, Bobby Hill. Thank you, Bobby. We couldn't do without you. And stay tuned to Bobby Hill. In a few minutes, he's going to do this music. And it goes until 1 o'clock, and he has avant-garde jazz, and it's fabulous. You've got to stay tuned and keep that dial fixed for other programs that Bobby has, like on Wednesday, Borderlines from 10 a.m. to noon, No Border, No Lines, with great musical variety. Okay, until next time, see art in everything you do. Experience the visual. Thanks for listening. We hope you've enjoyed the show, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Have a great afternoon, everyone.
Well, we had to pull on something, so we're grabbing at the threads, and now the world's inside our very heads. Glasses smeared with lipstick, hungry eyes out in the street. Same old bodies moving to the same old beat. I had to draw the line, had to draw the line. All this talk can hypnotize you. We can ill afford to give ourselves to sentiment when our time is oh so short. Names beneath the lichen on these cemetery stones. There are carnivals of silverfish waiting to dance upon our bones. Had to draw the line, help me draw the line, help me draw the line, help me draw the line. I've been down in yours, baby, need to take evasive action when the rumpus start. Here we are buck naked, yeah, but where should we begin when it's not the flesh we're after, but the howling ghost within? Help me draw the line. Help me draw the line. Help me draw the line. Need to draw the line. Help me draw the line. Need to draw.
WOWDLP, Tacoma Park.